That was beautiful. The clarity of your voice is just phenomenal. So thank you very much. And just what a treat. Just absolutely beautiful. You know, during announcements last week, I commented on the recent issue of Beyond Today. It really grabbed my attention. And I'll do that again right now by reading the words on the cover. Understanding the times, a time for choosing. Understanding the times, a time for choosing. And it is a time of choosing. From the beginning, humanity has always been in a time of choosing. You know, 6 years ago, I presented a message entitled, "Time is Not Our Friend." And given the increasingly frenetic and often disorienting times in which we live, we're going to review that message today. God inhabits eternity. He sees the end from the beginning. He transcends time. He created time. We, on the other hand, live within the confines of time, and this was God's intent. Our Father and the Word created time for a reason. They created a very finite existence within their eternal reality to move ahead with their plan of building a family. And our lives are made up of a very, 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 very limited amount of time. And that time is, in so many ways, the currency of life. So if time may be looked upon as the currency of life, why do we spend our time in ways that we would never consider spending our money? In wasteful ways. So this afternoon, let's look at reasons we may not always be the best stewards of our time, possible reasons that we may be behaving in those ways, and why this is important, and what we might want to consider doing to improve the use of our available time. Throughout His Word, God emphasizes the importance of correctly using time. If you would please turn to Psalm 90. Psalm 90, Psalm of Moses. Prayer of Moses. Psalm 90, verse 12. So teach us to number our days, that we may gain a heart of wisdom. And the New Living Translation renders this, teach us to realize the brevity of life so that we may grow in wisdom. The Life Application Study Bible comments, realizing that life is short helps us use the little time we have more wisely and for eternal good. In other words, our short human existences should force us to consider our ways to think. You know, we were having a brief conversation before services about, you know, the number of people who aren't with us in this room right now, the number of people who are integral to the foundation of this congregation for so many years and are no longer here. Many of them had very relatively brief lives. You know, the Apostle Paul continues his thought in Ephesians 5. If you would please turn to Ephesians. Ephesians 5. Verse 15, where the apostle writes, see then that you walk circumspectly, not as fools, but as wise, redeeming the time because the days are evil. And boy, are the days evil. See that you walk circumspectly. Walk carefully. Very guarded way. Not as fools, but as wise. Redeeming the time. The Life Application Study Bible further comments. By referring to these days as evil, Paul was communicating a sense of urgency because of evil's pervasiveness. We need the same sense of urgency because our days are also difficult. We must keep our standards high, act wisely, and do good whenever we can. Strong's exhaustive concordance comments on the Greek word rendered redeem, saying that it can mean to buy up, to ransom, to rescue from loss, and to improve opportunity. To buy up, to ransom, to rescue from loss. So we're buying up time. We're rescuing time that might otherwise be wasted. And to improve opportunity. In other words, redeeming time could be looked upon as being careful with our time, of course, wisely using the very limited time that we have in Satan's evil and twisted world. So let's consider reasons why we might not always be the best stewards of our time. Reason one, life in general keeps us busy, and life in Satan's world keeps us often on the defensive. Because of our rebellious human nature, life would be tough, and how we choose to use our time would be a challenge, even without Satan's influence. And we've talked about this in our innate human nature. Even without Satan's influence, our innate human nature puts us at odds with God's way. Satan and our own fallen natures are very effective at keeping us distracted. The bottom line, Satan wants to destroy us. We should all know that. But sometimes, and I'll speak for myself, Satan's influence on us, on me personally, is often lost as the source of the problem. And is often lost as the source of so much of the world's dysfunction, pain, and suffering. We know it's there, but in reality, it's hard to pin that down at times when something physical, not so much, although this physical, the underpinnings of the physical problem are spiritual, the spiritual source isn't right in front of us necessarily. The father of lies, the roaring lion, the prince of the power of the air, wants to keep us distracted, and he does this by turning up the volume on our human tendency toward the lust for whatever. Just do it if it feels good. It can't be bad, can it? It won't take that much time, will it? I'll watch that television program for only a few minutes. He knows we have limited time. He knows that very well because he knows his time as the God of this age is very limited as well. We might be bombarded by Satan's junk morning, noon, and night, but in some ways the cares of this world are often just living life and the choices that we make and how we choose to spend our very limited time. If you would please turn to Luke 10. Gospel of Luke, chapter 10, beginning in verse 38. And I've used this account many times because I think it's so telling, just absolutely telling of how we can all so easily lose track of our priorities, even when there's something very important happening. And this is, you know, the account of Mary and Martha hosting Jesus. And it, all well-intentioned, but he had very insightful comments to make about this interaction. I'll be reading from the New International Version, Luke chapter 10, beginning in verse 38. As Jesus and his disciples were on their way, he came to a village where a woman named Martha opened her home to him. She had a sister called Mary who sat at the Lord's feet listening to what he said. But Martha was distracted by all the preparations that had to be made. She came to him and asked, "Lord, don't you care that my sister has left me to do the work by myself? Tell her to help me." "Martha, Martha," the Lord answered, "you are worried and upset about many things, but few things are needed, or indeed, only one. Mary has chosen what is better, and it will not be taken away from her." The Life Application Study Bible comments, Martha and Mary both loved Jesus. On this occasion, they were both serving him. But Martha thought Mary's style of serving was inferior to hers. She didn't realize that in her desire to serve, she was actually neglecting her guest. Are you so busy doing things for Jesus that you're not spending time with him? Don't let your service become self-serving. Jesus did not blame Martha for being concerned about household chores. He was only asking her to set her priorities. Service to God can degenerate into mere busy work that is totally devoid of devotion to God. And, you know, this account is just so telling. Obviously, they knew Jesus was very, 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 very special. And Martha was very well intentioned in wanting things to be perfect for their very special guest. But she just lost track of what was most important at the time, and that was spending the time with him and making that connection. And, you know, it's such a human tendency to want, she was wanting to do things perfectly for him, but she just lost track of what was best to do at that particular time. And I think in life, we often end up doing that. It's not that our intentions aren't always, that we're not well-meaning in our intentions, but our priorities might be a little off track. And this brings us to a second reason. And although it isn't said that Martha was being prideful about her concern of wanting everything to go well, chances are when we have, guests, there's a certain issue of pride about our homes and wanting things to be just perfect for us and not necessarily for the guest. And this is something I've learned over the last few years. It really doesn't matter. As long as your home is safe and as clean as you can possibly make it, it's what happens within that home that's more important than what our pride is telling us to do. So the second reason is pride and self-sufficiency. You know, how are we spending our time and why are we spending that time? Is it about, how we want to be perceived or, I want everything to be right because that's the way I see it for myself, what I've done here. If you would please, turn to just a couple chapters ahead here. To Luke 12, and this is another account that I've referenced a good bit because I think it just says so much about human nature, about how we might think we have a certain amount of time, and in fact, we may not have another minute. We just don't know. And Mr. Goss, I really appreciate you mentioning the prayer request for Mrs. Kozer. Things can just change for us so quickly. Anyway, if you would, please turn to Luke 12 and beginning in verse 16. Once again, reading from the New Living Translation. And this is just such a telling account. Then Jesus told them a story. A rich man had a fertile farm that produced fine crops. He said to himself, "What should I do? I don't have room for all my crops." Then he said, "I know. I'll tear down my barns and build bigger ones. Then I'll have enough to store all my wheat and other goods. And I'll sit back and say to myself, 'My friend, you have enough stored away for years to come. Now take it easy, eat, drink, and be merry.' But God said to him, 'You fool, you will die this very night. Then who will get everything you worked for?' Yes, a person is a fool to store up earthly wealth but not have a rich relationship with God. This man failed to consider the uncertainties of life. His pride and sense of self-sufficiency were his downfall." Now, there's absolutely, in fact, we're instructed, this book's full of encouragement and instruction to prepare for the future, to prepare for our families' futures, to take care of things as well as we can. But when you get to the point where that's become a major focus or the major focus of life, and then you've gotten to a point where, hey, I'm set. I'm ready to go. Well, yeah, you may be ready to go because God may be taking you. So the man failed to consider the uncertainties of life, that we just don't know what's going to happen next. His pride and sense of self-sufficiency were his downfall. You know, once again, God knows the end from the beginning. We do not. Have you, and this is from the Life Application Study Bible as well, have you ever noticed that being busy tends to force us to be better time managers? It's really true. There's an expression I've heard, and I didn't jot it down, but I've remember hearing this for decades, and I'll probably slaughter this as well. If you need to get something done, give it to a busy person. And I think that's really true because the busy people know how to manage their time or they'll go under. So busy people tend to be efficient. So if you want to get something done, give it to a busy person. God understands this. He wants us to have full, varied, and abundant lives. But he always wants us to look to him for the direction. And that's where the pride and self-sufficiency can cause us some problems. If you would, please turn to James. Epistle of James. Once again, very, very frequently used scripture, and for good reason, reading from the New Translation, Living Translation, James chapter 4, beginning of verse 13, James chapter 4, beginning of verse 13. "Look here, you who say, 'Tomorrow, today or tomorrow, we are going to a certain town and we'll stay there a year. We will do business there and make a profit.' How do you know what your life will be like tomorrow? Your life is like the morning fog. It's here a little while, then it's gone. What you ought to say, 'If the Lord wants us to, we will live and do this or that. God willing, we will do this or that.' Otherwise, you are boasting about your own pretentious plans, and all such boasting is evil." You know, any biblical-based discussion of pride and self-sufficiency should include a mention of the church at Laodicea. And, you know, there's a lot that can go into discussions about the Laodicean church, but the fact of pride and self-sufficiency, we'd be remiss if we didn't at least touch on this tendency in the Laodicean church. If you would, please turn to Revelation 3. Revelation 3, beginning in 14. Once again, in the New Living Translation, Revelation 3, beginning in verse 14. Write this letter to the angel of the church in Laodicea. This is the message from the one who is the Amen, the faithful and true witness, the beginning of God's new creation. Verse 15. I know all the things you do, that you are neither hot nor cold. I wish that you were one or the other. But since you are like lukewarm water, neither hot nor cold, I will spit you out of my mouth. You say, I am rich. I have everything I want. I don't need a thing. And you don't realize that you are wretched and miserable and poor and blind and naked. So I advise you to buy gold from me, gold that has been purified by fire. Then you will be rich. Also buy white garments from me so you will not be ashamed by your nakedness, and ointment for your eyes so you will be able to see. I correct and discipline everyone I love. So be diligent and turn from your indifference. Look, I stand at the door and knock. If you hear my voice and open the door, I will come in and we will share a meal together as friends. Those who are victorious will sit with me on my throne, just as I was victorious and sat with my Father on his throne. Anyone with ears to hear must listen to the Spirit and understand what it is saying to the churches. You know, I've said this before and I'm going to say it again. The thought of having Jesus, you know, standing at our doors and knocking and him not getting an answer is horrible. Absolutely horrible. We should be one with our Creator and have his mind. He shouldn't have to go out of his way to spend time with us. We need to be the ones making the connection and spending the time with him. And that's where it's difficult. It absolutely can be difficult to prioritize that time, but it's an absolute must for our lives now, but more importantly, into eternity and into the future and into eternity. And, you know, this brings us to a third reason why we might not always be the best stewards of our time. And it actually has at least a tangential connection to Mr. Garcia's message of earlier with loneliness, because often discouragement and disengagement can lead to loneliness. And it, you know, it's a horrible thing to be lonely, but we're often in control of that outcome, you know, where that loneliness leads. You know, discouragement and disengagement with our spiritual lives can lead to a tragic misuse of time. And, the following is from introduction to a message, once again, of another 6-7 years ago, message on discouragement. Discouragement can be fleeting, the result of an acute episode of limited duration and of intense frustration. This type of discouragement comes and goes. Discouragement can also linger and be the result of ongoing and unresolved issues. And the latter type of discouragement may, if left unchecked, become a very serious problem. This discouragement can ultimately lead to a person drifting away from God and from His church. And with that discouragement and disengagement, there's a level of loneliness that can be the result. In other words, discouragement can be a deal breaker and an eternity ender. If we do not combat discouragement effectively, discouragement can lead to disengagement from the faith. And we are to let no one, and for that matter, no thing, take our crowns. We need to vigilantly guard against any threat to our future. Prolonged discouragement can potentially lead to disengagement from the faith. Time can be squandered through discouragement. If we glom on to that discouragement, and everyone gets discouraged, as Mr. Garcia was saying, you know, here we had, I think you quoted King David at least twice in your message. Here's man after God's own heart who was feeling very, 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 very discouraged and lonely. But he knew what he had to do ultimately. He set his priorities straight. He knew he had to engage with God. He always went to his Father for remedy, for help of his various and often horrible situations. But we can be so consumed by our own difficulties that we end up losing time instead of acting to do something about it sometimes. And it's not that we don't have reason to be discouraged, it's that we have to, and it's so hard to do. And once again, referring to Mr. Garcia's message again, you know, we need to, and to Mr. Cupps with Barnabas and being encouragers, we need to reach out to people when we have a sense that they need that sense of encouragement and that they might be really struggling. And this is one of the very important reasons that we've heard many messages over the years about why it is so important to remain engaged with the Sabbath and to come together as a body on the Sabbath, because things can start happening in our minds when this is put aside. We're able to encourage one another and hopefully help others to address discouragement in their lives. God, the ultimate planner and manager of time, and boy, is He, knew what we'd be confronting and provided required time, not just to check the box, but required time that we require each week to stay close to Him and to each other. If you would please turn to Acts 14. Acts 14, beginning in verse 21. Once again, the New Living Translation. Acts 14, beginning in verse 21. After preaching the good news in Derbe and making many disciples, Paul and Barnabas returned to Lystra, Iconium, and Antioch of Pisidia, where they strengthened the believers. They encouraged them to continue in the faith, reminding them that we must suffer many hardships to enter the kingdom of God. If you would please turn to Matthew 25. Beginning in verse 1, once again, the New Living Translation. Then the kingdom of heaven will be likened, or will be like 10 bridesmaids who took their lamps and went to meet the bridegroom. 5 of them were foolish and 5 were wise. The 5 who were foolish didn't take enough olive oil for the lamps, but the other 5 were wise enough to take along extra oil. When the bridegroom was delayed, they all became drowsy and fell asleep. All of them, all 10. At midnight, they were roused by the shout, "Look, the bridegroom is coming. Come out and meet him." All the bridesmaids got up and prepared their lamps. Then the 5 foolish ones asked the others, "Please give us some of your oil because our lamps are going out." But the others replied, "We don't have enough for all of us. Go to a shop and buy some for yourselves." But while they were gone to buy oil, the bridegroom came. Then those who were ready went in with him to the marriage feast, and the door was locked. Later, when the other 5 bridesmaids returned, they stood outside calling, "Lord, Lord, open the door for us." But he called back, "Believe me, I don't know you. So you too must keep watch, for you do not know the day or the hour of my return." All the bridesmaids became drowsy and fell asleep, all of them. So they all kind of let their guard down, spent time maybe on other things. The 5 without enough oil definitely weren't prioritizing their time. But they all tended to fall into the difficulty of becoming drowsy and then ultimately falling asleep. We are the bridesmaids. We need to be the wise bridesmaids and make the best use of our time, letting these relatively calm, these are dangerous times, but they're still relatively calm, get by us could prove to be tragic. Is there a downside to redeeming the time? You know, sometimes if we look at a cost-benefit analysis or whatever, pluses, the minuses, you know, there are pluses and minuses with various options. But is there really a downside to making the most of our time? Now, one could say, well, I'm not going to have time to whatever. I don't know, I don't want to say anything that someone might identify with because there's nothing in particular that's coming to mind. But there really isn't a downside to making the most of our time. There are definite downsides to not making the most of our time, to wasting our time, not valuing that time. We need to do it for the church, for our families, for our friends, and for ourselves. You know, we are living in really crazy, nutty times. You know, good's being called bad or evil. Evil's being called good. This is up, which is really down. That's down. You know, we're living in these times, but right now it's spiritually dangerous, but we're not living in physically dangerous times. But we've just seen over the last few years, really since COVID, how quickly things can turn. And when we get to the point where it becomes physically dangerous, we may not have the wherewithal to make course corrections that will be necessary. You know, we don't know when Jesus will return, but we do know that he will return, and we need to be ready. God's mercy will never, ever fail, but his patience has its limits. You know, I was working on a message about the parable of the barren fruit fig tree. And, you know, when you start getting into these things, it becomes so multi-layered and you're trying to sort through it all, it can get really involved. But One of the aspects of from that parable is that, you know, God is merciful, God is patient, but his patience, he's always going to be merciful, but his patience has limits, and sometimes his mercy, he's being merciful to us and will ultimately be merciful to people in ways that are putting an end to a very difficult situation in terms of their own spiritual lives. He will always be merciful, but there will come a time when the time has come for an acceleration of end time events, and we need to be using our time, once again, the currency of life, very wisely. So how can we do this? One way, examine our use of time daily. You know, say, what did I do today? How did I spend my time? You know, every Passover season, which is very rapidly approaching, we follow Paul's instruction in 2 Corinthians 13 to examine ourselves. But we need to be evaluating ourselves and our use of time daily. Are we using our time wisely in light of our ultimate responsibilities and of our ultimate goal of being in his kingdom? Another way, we need to be a planner. We need to identify how we've used our time, but we need to be planning. I remember Mr. Pebworth saying years and years ago, and I think it was in this room, that he and Mrs. Pebworth are planners. And with, you know, the lives that they've led, they've had to be planners with all their responsibilities and the like. And, you know, we need to not just let life happen. We need to be following how God is leading us. Much of life will just happen because time and chance happen to us all, but it happens to us in a different way because of God's involvement and leading. Third way, we need to hold ourselves accountable when our planning misses the mark a little bit, or a lot. We need to hold ourselves accountable, and we can do this by having accountability partners, having people that we say, hey, I need someone to help me stay on track because I'm doing this or I'm doing that. Would you give me a hand with this? And we need to not give up when we hit a roadblock. Fourth way, we need to draw a line in the sand and where appropriate and say no more. I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to be wasting my time doing this, getting off into the weeds. You know, we're to cling to God. He wants us to cling to him, not just occasionally brush by. There's a big difference between clinging to someone and just occasionally brushing by. We do this through constant prayer, regular Bible study, regular fasting, regular meditation, and fellowship. And we need to schedule time for all of those. And it's so difficult to do. It is so, so, so difficult to do. But it's possible. It's just difficult. Okay, let's go ahead and move towards wrapping this up. If you would please turn to Ecclesiastes, another frequently cited and used scripture. Ecclesiastes 3, which is absolutely true. Ecclesiastes 3, beginning in verse 1, once again from the New Living Translation. There truly is a time for everything. For everything there is a season, a time for every activity under heaven, a time to be born and a time to die, A time to plant and a time to harvest. A time to kill and a time to heal. A time to tear down and a time to build up. A time to cry and a time to laugh. A time to grieve and a time to dance. A time to scatter stones and a time to gather stones. A time to embrace and a time to turn away. A time to search and a time to quit searching. A time to keep and a time to throw away. A time to tear and a time to mend. A time to be quiet and a time to speak. A time to love and a time to hate. A time for war and a time for peace. As Paul wrote in the 13th chapter of his letter to the Romans, "For you know how late it is. Time is running out. Wake up, for our salvation is nearer now than we first believed. The night is almost gone. The day of salvation will soon be here." And I want to close with a quote from Jason Godfrey's article in the aforementioned Beyond Today, entitled "Every Second Counts." As Christ's disciples, our primary focus is on God's kingdom, and we should always have an eye toward that goal. Is our time allocation helping or hindering that aim? We can fritter away time or use it profitably. At the end of our days, will we look back upon a life well lived, or will we regret all the time we wasted? If we are wise and prioritize our actions in these evil days, then we will focus on the right tasks at the right moment, redeem our time, and enhance our relationship with God. Well, I hope you all have a great rest of your Sabbath.